Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us once more on Queensberry Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com, and we have a special show today. It'll be all Queensberry Rules up, I think. But I think already I have Mr. Matthew Swain on the line. Is that true?
That's it. Hey, Beard, how you doing?
Doing well, man. How are you?
It's 5 o'clock, so I'm in good shape.
Yeah, I know. We got the late start time, so I think we might be having more people tuning in live than we normally do. But it should be fun. Just to carry forth with what I was saying, we're also going to be having Samuel Shepard, who's also a writer here at QueensberryRules.com, and then, of course, the editor/founder of Queensberry Rules. Tim Stark is going to be joining us in, I don't know, probably an hour or so, maybe a little more. But we're definitely going to be getting down to some Floyd Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana talk today. Needless to say, that's going to be the big thing on the menu, I think. But if you don't mind, Mr. Swain, I was actually going to see if we could break down this past week so we can leave a little bit more of the meaty discussion to for when everybody's here, if that's cool. You down for that?
Yeah, that works for me.
So what did you think of Keith Thurman destroying Julio Diaz? What was your overall view on that?
You know, I actually didn't take as giant a shit on it as everybody else did. I didn't really expect it to be too terribly competitive. But, you know, given Diaz's somewhat history as a bit of a spoiler, you know, against Porter and Khan to a small degree, I thought he'd at least be competitive. And he was there for a very, very brief period. And, you know, I was impressed with Thurman, as I usually am. He's got good power in both hands. He punches... Put his punches together well, and you know, he made it look like the mismatch that it really was.
Yeah, you know, I needless to say, did kind of take a shit on the fight beforehand, and I don't want to do the "I told you so" thing because, well, there's not really a whole lot for me to say "I told you so" on, because Julio Diaz actually looked at for a second there like maybe he kind of belonged in there. In that last, I think it was the third round, you know, he kind of started letting his hands go. He actually landed some meaningful shots, but I can't say, obviously, whether or not he really wanted to be in there or didn't. I can't read his mind, but I think physically, he probably started to realize that physically his body just wasn't really up for the type of fight that he would have had to pull off if he wanted to win, you know. That I think that it was, you know, better than what I thought it would be going into, at the very least, if I got to be, you know, begrudgingly positive about it, I guess.
I think everybody takes a huge shit on Julio Diaz, and then, well, I know you did, and I know a bunch of other people did, but, you know, he's tricky, and he's very tough, and he's very beatable. He's, you know, you put him in with somebody and say, all right, I want you to look good, but I want you to go some rounds. Well, you know, Thurman looked good, but he didn't go very many rounds. And shit, man, I mean, you can't make your ribs tougher. I mean, if you're going to pull
true.
Out with a broken rib, I mean, I'm not. I've had a couple of broken ribs, and God, they hurt like hell. So I'm not going to say, oh well, you know, Julio Diaz dished out or what have you. He took some really, absolutely hellacious shots. And Thurman is a genuine puncher. I mean, that guy can punch. So, you know, good for Keith Thurman. He got him out of there in a hurry. He didn't take a whole lot of punishment to get him out of there. He did what he had to do. So you can't really bitch too much about Thurman. He did what he was supposed to do.
Well, I think especially in hindsight, you know, it's always going to be hindsight type of shit. But in hindsight, I do have to, you know, say that I can't really crap on Julio Diaz now at this point, because he's gone through – a relatively long career. You know, it's not necessarily illustrious or anything, but he's already proven that he's tough. He's already basically paid his dues. So, you know, I'm not going to crap on him. I thought that he got out pretty much at the right time if he was going to get out. But, you know, he just Warren, that's all. I think that he's definitely going to be a viable opponent, probably for a little bit, at least against somebody who's not going to hit too hard, I suppose. But my question is, did it really tell us a whole lot about Keith Thurman? Did we learn anything about him, or did he learn anything in there?
I don't think so. I think we more or less just sort of got confirmation of what we knew about Thurman, which is that he lets his hands go. He's quick. He's a very fluid puncher, and he has defensive liabilities. But that wasn't anything we didn't know going into it. So, you know, on the one hand, it's, God, I wish Thurman would have taken a step up. But on the other hand, it's not like he took a step back. So, you know, a Stay Busy fight, do you want it as the main event on Showtime Championship Boxing? Absolutely not. But, I mean, he went in there, he did what he was supposed to do. He knocked out a rugged guy who is really not an easy out for anyone. And that was just kind of the story.
Well, and that actually kind of leads into the next, you know, line of questioning that I had written down already, which was that was part of the storyline going into the fight. I mean, you know, it was not a super high-profile fight card. It wasn't anything that people were going into thinking it was going to be anything great. It wound up being pretty damn good, you know, partially because of Lucas Matisse versus Molina. But as far as the actual, you know, main event, there seemed to be a little bit of detraction as far as Keith Thurman headlining against a guy like Julio Diaz. You know, and it goes to the point that Foley and I have been talking about for however long now, about whether or not things are worth paying for, or things that, you know, are up to the standard that they should be. The point being, you know, in your opinion, is Keith Thurman fit to be headlining bigger cards at this point? I mean, does this prove anything in that regard?
Not against Julio Diaz, no.
Yeah, there you have it. Short answer, not against Julio Diaz. But, well, I mean, let's say they do make, for example, Keith Thurman versus Sean Porter, and that kind of, you know, seems to be the direction that most people want to go down, which is cool. That sounds like a good fight to me. But is that like a legitimate headliner? I mean,
yeah.
In this day and age, it probably is, yes. I mean, there's no question about it, but should it be?
No, I think it should be. That's a legitimate fight between two top five welterweights, or at least very close to top five. Yeah, that's a headliner. I mean, belts aside, because if somebody's not the actual champ, I really don't give a shit. But, yeah, for sure. I'll watch two top five welterweights against each other any day of the week. And I don't have a problem paying for that. I don't want to watch that on pay-per-view. But, yeah, I mean, that's why I have a Showtime subscription.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, at this point, you're kind of bought in anyway if you have Showtime or HBO, so. You know, whether you watch or not probably isn't really going to have any bearing. But, yeah, that's a fight that I think that is proper in terms of the development of Keith Thurman and Sean Porter, I guess, you know, both as fighters. It's kind of a, I don't even know if you'd say a crossroads fight. It's just a fight between two younger guys that seem to be, you know, have an upward career trajectory. And on top of that, it's on a fairly high level, I would say. So I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be or shouldn't be a headliner. But, like you said, not against Julio Diaz. That was kind of a crap move. I actually thought when they were putting the whole card together and they were just mentioning who was going to be on it, I thought that Matisse Molina was going to be the headliner just off of, you know,
yeah,
basically name value, I guess. But I was
wrong.
Yeah,
that was pretty much what I figured, too.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
go ahead.
I mean, when you are going to set up a Thurman versus Porter fight, it's just, and I don't know if maybe people are somewhat jaded now because you do get mismatches on HBO and Showtime, and that's sort of what I call the Al Haymon effect, where we saw Andre Berto against nobody for years on HBO. And now that kind of transferred to some people on Showtime where it's like, I don't want to watch that shit. But at the same time, you have to build up some fights. So there is a promotional period in effect. you know, if you can make, and I kind of go back to like the Wanma versus Gamboa thing with Aram, where Aram let that marinate for way too long, and it really bit him in the ass. But if you can build up Thurman and Porter to make it a huge fight on Showtime, yeah, throw him in there against somebody that's going to make him look good. And I don't think anybody thought the Porter-Malignaggi fight was supposed to make Porter look good, but it did. And now
yeah.
if you said, all right, we're going to make Thurman versus Porter in September, who isn't watching that fight?
I would definitely watch that fight.
Yeah.
Do you think Thurman, do you think, like, in terms of development, do you think that the opportunity's there for Keith Thurman to win? Do you think that he's, you know, on about the same level or better than Sean Porter right now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, nobody's really done to Malignaggi what Porter did, but at the same time, this is the same guy that struggled horribly with that same Julio Diaz not that long ago. So maybe Malignaggi got old overnight, which I tend to doubt, but Malignaggi also lost to Broner. So, you know, all right, eat a few guys that are sort of bottom tier. And when I say bottom of the top tier welterweight, you know, say 5 through 10 like Malignaggi, and you could say Malignaggi was a top 10 welterweight, and Porter absolutely annihilated him. And then you got Thurman,
yeah.
who's going to Diaz, who's definitely not a top 10 welterweight. I mean, he's not anywhere close, but he annihilated Diaz, and nobody else has really done that. So
yeah, usually
yeah,
when Diaz is, well, like you said, usually Julio Diaz is more of a kind of, you know, a guy who can go rounds. I mean, he did against Jose Luis Castillo, and he
yeah.
put up a valiant effort there. I mean, he got the shit kicked out of him, but he put up a damn good effort. You know, he's
right.
a guy that's Juan Diaz, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that when you have guys that are, you know, pointed towards each other like that, and at this point, there's really just, you know, I'm hoping that the whole Al Haymon not really matching, you know, upper-tier fighters of his together, it's happened before, but it doesn't happen very often, and I hope that that trend, if you will, kind of comes to an end, you know, with something like this, because we saw it just recently, you know, not to bring up old shit, as they say, but we just saw it recently with Kovalev versus Adonis Stevenson, where they were, you know, seriously aimed right at each other. These friggin' massive weapons of destruction. That's hyperbole, obviously, but they're aimed totally at each other. The fight's totally makeable. It looks likely to happen, and then just bleh. So I hope that this is not a situation like that. I hope that this is Keith Thurman and Sean Porter are going to be matched here the next year or so, and that shit is going to be hopefully explosive, pause, when it happens.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is they're both with Golden Boy. They're both with Haymon. And they're both with Showtime. So I don't really see
yeah,
what's
there's no
us.
Excuse. Yeah, there's no excuse. So if this doesn't happen, then what the fuck?
Right. So I don't see it as being a direct analog to Kovalev Stevenson, but yeah, they're all right around there, and Haymon's got so many guys in or around 147. If he doesn't match them with each other, who the hell who are they going to fight?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
have to
for
fight
sure.
Somebody. And I mean, Jesus. Thurman versus Porter, that's a great welterweight fight. You got two guys that are both top 10 welterweights, arguably top five. Probably not, but arguably. And, as an eliminator, see who gets a Mayweather fight eventually. That's a great fight. Because eventually people are going to get tired of Mayweather handpicking, which he's been doing for a long time. And I'm not taking a shot at the guy. He's shutting out everybody, but if you can build that fight, say you get an absolute war between Thurman and Porter, who doesn't want to see that winner fight Mayweather?
You know, it's tough for me because I try to be fair. You know, as a guy who doesn't really like Floyd Mayweather all that much, I don't hate him, but I don't like him all that much. And of course, there are always bad things to say or whatever. But I try to, you know, balance it between being fair, you know, and kind of being able to step back and say, ah, well, I can't really expect the guy to do the same type of thing that fighters did in the 40s or 50s or 60s or whatever. It's just not that type of boxing era anymore. But at the same time, you know, I think that you also kind of touched on it there, that more or less, even if you can't say, you know, Floyd Mayweather needs to be fighting so-and-so or this guy instead, even if you can't say that, the opponents are hand-picked because that's just
right.
The type of power that he has. So, of course, he's going to basically guide, you know, certain opponents onto his record and them only. Anyway.
Well, the other part, too, is, I mean, as far as Showtime is concerned, they've got him all this guaranteed money, and there's going to be some point where they're not breaking even. And they're going to go, okay, you've got to fight so-and-so so that we can make a little money. I mean, they're going to have to.
Yeah, I know that there's got to be some point, you know, with that, but I just don't even know what it is. I don't know how bad it would have to get in order for them to even, you know, I don't know. I've wondered that. Yeah.
If they said, presuming he beats Maidana, which I fully expect him to do by a wide margin, if they said he's going to fight Sean Porter in September, I wouldn't bitch. And if they said, all right, he's going to fight Keith Thurman in September, I wouldn't complain. But if they said, all right, Sean Porter and Keith Thurman are going to fight in August, and then Mayweather will fight one of them in November, so much the better. I don't see that happening.
It's actually funny. It's funny you say that because our good buddy Joel Stern, who's been on the show before, he just said, I had tweeted out Thurman versus Porter, make it happen. And he replied, or they each fight a bunch of lesser fighters and both get to fight Floyd, which is kind of what you were just saying. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that unfortunately could be the case, but I don't know. You know, Showtime they're not in the business of losing money. So if they can make a good fight where they can get potentially good viewership, matching those two with each other, I don't see them not doing that, doing that, just because, hey, it's boxing, and God only knows what the people that make the fights are thinking, but at the same time, yeah, they got to keep those guys busy. Those guys get eyes on TVs. So that could happen. If it does great.
They seem to be investing in both. So I would imagine that, I hope that they keep that momentum up, and I hope that they do start matching the Heyman fighters, you know, ASAP, more often, whatever you want to say. So the talk, I guess, of the weekend, since it happened, or at least I would say it is and should be, is the potential fight of the year candidate, leading contender, I don't know, however you want to call it, Lucas Matisse versus John Molina. That was unexpected. You know, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't either. I guess maybe I had, I mean, looking back on it, you say, maybe the DeMarco fight was just a fluke. And then you look a little bit more at the Mickey Day fight and say, all right, well, this guy really, really got some punching power. And he does. Like, Molina is a really big puncher. And probably 135 was too small for him. Because when you look at him against Matisse, he looks bigger. So maybe the 5 pounds was really, really helpful. But God damn, what a fight. I couldn't get over how brutal it was. Every time Matisse would land a flurry, and he was really pressing the action throughout, Molina would just come out of nowhere with a right hand, and like nobody shakes Matisse like that. Like, the knockdown he suffered against Garcia, he popped right back up, and it was kind of no big deal, but the first knockdown, you just sort of went, holy shit, Matisse's really hurt. And it was such a huge shot that it was sort of the dual reaction of, holy shit, Matisse's really hurt, and holy shit, how the hell did he get up?
Yeah, and I mean, he, At first, I was kind of like, the way that he fell, I was kind of skeptical and was like, oh, you know, I think that he got kind of pulled down or something like that. But then when I saw him actually, like, in the act of getting up, I was like, oh, he looks actually a little shaken. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think that it was – there was much – I don't think that it was a surprise that Molina has punching power if he doesn't really have a whole lot else. Well, he doesn't really have a whole lot else. He's a nice kid, but we've seen it time and time again, even on the kind of Friday Night Fights type level, where basically he's either knocking a guy out – or he's kind of just following a guy around and not throwing a lot of punches, which is pretty much what he did against Mickey Bay until the final round. And so, you know, that's been kind of like a constant knock on the guy, win or lose, is that he either turns it on really late or, you know, potentially too late, or in a few cases just never really turned it on. And so I don't know if it took somebody like Matisse constantly pressing that would give him kind of like an advantage to throw a little bit more, an opportunity to throw a little bit more or whatever. But yeah, it was unexpected, because I didn't really expect him to be able to hurt Matisse all that badly, or I didn't really expect him to make it to a point where he could. And he almost made it to the end. You know, he was getting his ass kicked for the last three or four rounds, like real bad.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It wasn't probably the last like four rounds were not close. And those are the rounds that, when, you know, the show set came up, it was Matisse landing like 34 power punches and Molina landed two. So it became, say, rounds 8 through 11 was just an absolute savage beating. But, man, during those early rounds, and the thing with Molina, too, is, like, Mickey Bay stayed away from him, and most guys that have beaten him, they'll make him chase. You know, Matisse's not going to make anybody chase him. He's going to come right at you. And it just so happened that Molina was enough taller and could get the range just right and just absolutely blasted him with some right hand. And those were not like, you look back on it, and those were not flash knockdowns. Those were huge flush punches that when you watch it the second or even third time, and I watched it three times just because I'm a bloodthirsty asshole, but holy shit, how did he get up? And Matisse would pop right back up and press, which is insane.
Yeah, he's obviously, I mean, on one hand, I came away from that fight going, oh, shit, you know, Matisse just, you know, had a couple scary moments against a guy like John Molina, who I didn't, you know, before think was in his class. And so I initially came away thinking, I don't know if he's going to be wanting to get back in with Danny Garcia anytime super soon. But at the same time, you know, I always try to kind of remind myself that there's also good in what he showed. He showed that, you know, he was able to recover from being kind of dinged up or hurt. He did wind up with another cut, too, like another, you know, eye injury that seemed to kind of be affecting the fight. He worked his way through it, even if it was against John Molina. He worked his way through it and came out still like a beast.
Yeah, and, I mean, Molina hit him flush a bunch of times, and Garcia hit him just as flush and couldn't back him off, couldn't deter him, and it took whatever it was, five or six punches, and the 10th or 11th round of their fight for him to drop Matisse, and Matisse popped right back up and didn't look hurt with his eye swollen completely shut. But against Molina, when he would take a huge shot, you could see it in his face like, oh, shit. This guy can really punch. And Molina can. I mean, you can say what you want to about his skill level or what have you, but
he was able to really turn over those shots.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just huge punches. So, I mean, not just to survive them, but to keep pressing forward as he did through them. And then the second knockdown that I didn't, it was a shot on the back of the head. But his head was turned, so that's sort of a push. You can say that, all right, yes, it was a foul, but it was an intentional foul. So I'm not going to bitch about Jack Rice calling that one a knockdown, but he popped right back up after that one, too, and kept pressing forward. And he was really dictating the action from, say, about the fifth round on. And that was, and by, like, say, probably round 7, it was really clear who was in control. And he looked at the scorecards and kind of went, "Jesus, that was Molina ahead." And then you go back the next round, and it just got to be by the eighth or ninth. It was, how is Molina still standing?
Yeah. Yeah,
so tough.
That was one of the kind of away from Molina. And his chin, you know, people were worried about his chin because of, you know, getting essentially destroyed by Antonio DeMarco in that fight, and he was. I mean, I think that he was a combination of being caught cold, maybe a little surprised, whatever, you know, hurt, hungry, horny, whatever. I don't know what it was, but he obviously created some, there was some suspicion about his chin after that fight. So I think that in this fight, at least, I don't know if it was that he was at 140 and not 135, but he, at least in my head, kind of dispelled the rumors about him having any type of crappy chin, because I would say that even after the Garcia fight and all that type of stuff, and, you know, Lucas Matisse was exposed or dismantled or whatever, he's obviously a very hard puncher. He puts a lot into his punches, and Molina took a lot of them. So any rumor about, you know, Molina not being tough or not having a good chin, I think that you kind of got to put it to rest at this point.
Oh, absolutely. I think you can pretty much chalk up the DeMarco fight as an aberration. Because it was, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
And that really was sort of. Well, I mean, DeMarco hit him cleanly a few times, and then Molina just kind of froze.
No, I mean, not really.
Where
the hell is DeMarco at? Where is that guy?
That's a good question, because I don't know. He's not fighting on a co-main event on Showtime, I know that.
Yeah, apparently not. Yeah,
no,
well.
It was just, man, I mean, that was beautiful. And then you sort of think about Mickey Day, too. What was he tested? I mean, his testosterone to epitestosterone ratio was 30 to 1. So maybe. And normal is 1 to 1. So maybe, just maybe. I'll throw it out there. He might have been pharmacologically enhanced.
It was a little elevated. Only 30 times, a little elevated.
Yeah, I mean, that's like going from Lou Ferrigno to the Hulk. 30 to 1, that's insane.
Yeah, and then just since we're kind of delving into that territory, I might as well bring it up, I guess, since it's news. But it was reported, I think it was the news was broken yesterday, I believe, that. At least three fighters on a Floyd Mayweather promotions card all tested positive for something, for some performance-enhancing drug. So, yeah, that's interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Yeah, maybe they got too close to Leonard Ellerby's goatee and it just sort of rubbed off.
Yeah, that is kind of made of the stuff that the TJ pharmacies just totally sell by the gallon, I guess.
Well, I mean, this is not the first case. So there's been Mickey Day, and then somebody else I know had gotten popped, and then there's three guys. So there's obviously something going on. I mean,
wasn't it Jay Leon Love?
Yeah, it was Jay Leon Love.
Yeah, and he
so
was
there,
one of
there,
the
there's
first.
Obviously something. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
and I think that Jay Leon Love was the first like Mayweather Promotions fighter too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not positive about
something.
That, but I think. But regardless, I don't want to get, you know, I'm not going to start pointing fingers or ranting about conspiracies or anything, but I would say that at the very least that's interesting. I would say that, you know, it's kind of coinky-dinky.
Tend to agree with you on that. It's, it's tough to believe in coincidences when it keeps happening. That happens twice. All right, that's coincidence. Three times with multiple people, you kind of have to start going, And obviously, I mean, you can't say anything about Mayweather because he's never popped. I mean, he undergoes that really stringent PED testing, but something is obviously amiss at Mayweather Promotions.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question that it's at the very least fishy. I mean, at least as far as Floyd goes, though, and damn, I mean, actually even talking about this now kind of reminds me that we don't really go into this all that often on the show just because it's such a friggin' rabbit hole. But As far as Floyd goes, it's kind of similar to me to a Hopkins or even a Tim Bradley, because these guys are guys that generally stay in the gym and generally stay in pretty good shape. So I'm less likely to believe that they're on anything funny than other guys who are, you know, gaining weight and then losing weight super rapidly, but then looking super ripped and also, you know, getting hurt often and, you know, recovering from injuries quickly and stuff like that. That's a little bit more of a red flag to me, but regardless.
Yeah, I mean, when James County fought for steroids and a weight loss agent, we all kind of went, oh, well, that makes sense. And he was still fat as shit. But,
yeah.
You know, somebody like Mayweather, who's just never out of the gym, it's the same way with Hopkins, because Hopkins is never out of the gym. Bradley is never out of the gym. You know, there's that burden of proof that it's just, I wouldn't say it's hard to come by. It's almost impossible to come by because, you know, those guys are throwbacks. They're never out of the gym. So you can't say, oh, well, he was trying to lose weight, because obviously none of them need to lose weight. They don't ever gain it.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I think that I think Sam is trying to patch in right now. Let me see if I can get him on.
Okay.
Sam. Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, I can hear
you. Thanks for calling in, man.
Hi, hi. How are you? Sorry, it's not echoing, is it? I haven't got speakers plugged in.
Nope.
No, I can hear you.
Sounds good.
Okay, perfect. Sorry, I'm a virgin with this whole thing.
Pause.
Yeah.
I beat you to the pause.
I left it open. Come on.
All right. So we were just, we were basically discussing PEDs, but since you're on here and we were also discussing Lucas Matisse versus Molina before that, did you have a minute to catch that fight earlier?
Oh, man, yeah. I don't know. It's another pause, but it was quite an emotional fight, I thought. Especially Molina, like, he was a genuine credit to the sport, the whole performance throughout the fight and afterwards and subsequently. It was genuinely made me proud to be a fan. It doesn't happen very often. But he was so obviously, I don't know if you guys felt the same way, he was so kind of overwhelmed to be part of such a great fight and kind of such a crowd-pleasing fight against a guy like Matisse. I think he came in there expecting to get hurt a lot earlier than he did. And he took the punches and he went as far as anyone's gone since, I don't know, what round was it he knocked out of Jose? I can't remember. Was that maybe 11. The 10th or the 11th? But yeah, no one's gone that far with Matisse apart from Garcia in a long time. I thought he was an absolute credit.
And it's not often that you see a fighter, you know, a fighter with like basically the mental wherewithal, especially right after a fight in which you just got stopped, be able to kind of step back, you know, away from the fight. And I think that he was genuinely realizing that he just participated in something that even though he lost and by stoppage, that it still elevated him, you know, that it wasn't a total like, oh shit, I just lost, you know, there goes everything, which
yeah,
is, I think,
yeah,
a really common reaction for fighters when they lose, especially like that. But it was like, he was able to be like, hey, you know, the guy's better than me and I was stopped, but what do you want me to do? I put up a great fight. It's
yeah,
not often you see guys
I
able
felt,
to do
I felt
that.
Exactly the same way, man. Like, it was the complete antithesis to Figueroa being a little baby in the fight before. Molina was a complete gentleman and a real sportsman. And he seemed to see the bigger picture immediately. Kind of, he stepped away from the fight, like you said, and he was immediately saying, you know, that he was proud of kind of the result. The result was irrelevant. It was similar to how Provodnikov talks about the Bradley fight now, where he says he lost, but kind of he's just proud of what they did. And we give him a lot of credit for that. And I think Molina deserves the same thing, the same good feeling. And I hope to see him again. I think he can give a lot of guys problems. I think if he fought like that against Broner, I think he'd knock him out.
Yeah,
you know,
completely.
I just wanted to point out really quick before you said something, Mr. Swain, but I noticed that there were a handful of times. Well, first of all, Joe Goosen giving the ref the super evil eye right before the round that it was stopped was, first of all, pretty hilarious. But he also was on the verge, it looked like, of giving him a "you better get inside on him now" type of speech. You know, in like, I think it was between, it was before the 10th and then I think again before the 11th. So, yeah.
He said something, didn't he? I can't remember what it was. He said, like, you've got to dig in or something like that. It was very similar to the Corrales.
Yeah, I mean, that was before the 10th and then I guess before the 11th, like right after Goosen in his epic Canadian tuxedo got into it with a ring doctor. Or I guess it was actually right after that. He said, you got to put your punches together and get him out of there. And I just remember thinking,
ridiculous.
How can he even
ridiculous.
Hear this? I was just, oh, my God. And, you know, Goosen is Goosen, but damn.
Dude is the most stylish trainer ever.
And then he went out there. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then Molina went out there, like, all balls and no balance. And it was just...
Yeah, he was fucked. But he took it, and, you know, he went out on his shield 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys saw, he did, I think it was quite recently after the fight, I think it was on Ring TV, but he did an interview with Doug Fisher. It looked like the same night, like it looked sort of later on that night, and he was sort of coming out of the stadium with his wife and stuff, and he was talking about, you know, I'd love to do it again straight away. He was right back on it, and I don't know if Matisse's interested. I think he wants to chase Garcia, but yeah, Molina deserves another TV date, I think, in a sort of reasonably high profile slot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, I'm needing you guys to talk. I feel like I'm rambling.
I thought that you were cutting out, Swain, so I was like stopping for a second. So I was like, wait a second, is he talking? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, when he was talking to Matisse after the fight, and they got him in the hallway, and...
Oh, yeah, I've seen
Spanish,
that. Yeah.
Right,
he's
like,
pretending
my Spanish
he doesn't understand Spanish. It's funny.
Right, my Spanish is very bad. It's horrible because I'm so out of practice, but the two of them were talking, and, I mean, if I had taken that kind of a beating, I would be in the ICU for a week. And I just kept thinking, Jesus, they're gonna take Molina to the hospital, like, right now. And I'm not usually that... Okay, get him to the hospital right now, but he's fine. He's having a conversation, and I'm sure he did go to the hospital, but wow, I mean, that's so tough.
He genuinely, he seemed perky and kind of upbeat. It was crazy.
Yeah,
like,
and
contrast it with Malignaggi the week before, you know, getting sort of...
Right.
I've heard stories about, like, guys trying to get a shot of him on the stretcher in the ambulance and getting sort of pushed away, and it was really kind of a sort of nasty... finale, and then this week, you know, you've got Molina bouncing out of the arena, having just been absolutely beaten up by one of the hardest hitting guys in the division.
Yeah, crazy. And it wasn't like that goofy shit that Victor Ortiz did after Maidana, where you weren't sure that he was being goofy because he had a concussion or just because he's a goofy shit, but it just sort of really lucid and with it, and yeah, it was a great fight. I was happy to be a part of it, and we're all kind of sitting there going, holy shit, that guy's tough.
Yeah, but like, that's the thing with Molina, though. It's not the first time. Like, I remember after the Mickey Bay fight, he leant over, and Floyd was there kind of, and Ellaby's, like, yelling at the ref, and the money team are doing all this, you know, the bad loser stuff. And Floyd leant over, and he shook Molina's hand, and he went, well done. And Molina went, good luck against Canelo, I'm a real fan. And he was, you could tell he was like starstruck to be shaking Floyd's hand. And it was like, he feels so down to earth when you talk to him, despite
yeah,
these superhuman performances.
Yeah, I think I tweeted out like right kind of at the end of it that Lucas Matisse is why guys like me invented guns.
Yeah.
So that we wouldn't have to fight those dudes hand to hand. But Jesus, that applies to both of them. And those guys,
that's
my holy shit.
On his ranch.
By the way, guys, real quick, I'm going to put Mr. Starks on.
Okay.
Tim Starks.
And that's the first time I've heard your voice, Sam Shepard. I thought you would sound like a British Tom Waits.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just assumed that you'd be all gravelly. And
I'm very worldly, but I've got Dorian Gray's voice, luckily.
Solid. Well, welcome to the show, Mr. Starks, our fearless leader. Thanks for hopping on with us.
Yeah, I assume you've just gotten through all the best material without me. I'll take whatever leftovers you guys have.
Ah, well, you know, we are bloggers after all, but we were just talking Lucas Matisse versus Molina, so regale us with some stuff there.
The fight was so good. That's all I've got. I don't know anything else about what the fight was good. That's it. That's all I got.
This is a damn good fight.
Yeah, no, it was obviously it was thrilling. Anytime there's an element of surprise to something like that, it always makes it more fun. I didn't see Molina putting up any kind of significant challenge at 140 against this guy. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Molina was getting stormed and stopped by Antonio DeMarco. It was a weird fight, of course, but I just was like, no way this guy stands up to Matisse in a new division. I just didn't see it coming. It was delightful for that reason, but also just because knockdowns everywhere, half of them obviously not real knockdowns. But just so much fun and really came out of that fight thinking that both of those guys were terrific and that I loved them and wanted to hug them.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, there was this kind of real sense of camaraderie afterwards, like with everyone who watched it, and there was no kind of anger despite, I don't know, there might have been Molina fans in the crowd, but I know Matisse's, you know, everyone's guy, but like, everyone came out looking better, despite the, like you said, the strange knockdown, but everything else, it was just one of those fights where everyone wins, and I hope they both do well from it, and you know, Garcia's talking about not giving rematches, but he fought Morales twice, so I think he can shut up and fight Matisse again.
Yeah, I completely agree with Sam on that one.
I thought it was at least the 177th best fight I've ever seen.
177? That's a fairly precise number, Jim.
It's an allusion to a conversation Sam had with Iceman John Scully, I think.
Yeah, that was... It was JB originally, and I got the message at, I think, about 1 a.m. UK time, and Scully said, he asked where the Matisse Molina fight ranked all time, which is just such an absurd question, that Bag said probably about 180, and yeah, I was with outrage that it was in the top 180, that any sane person would have it outside. And I don't think the Iceman got it initially, but we cleared it up eventually.
Yeah, he's a good guy. It's Valor Margulis kind of with you guys. All men must be trolled.
Yeah, exactly. It was excellent. It was an excellent trolling opportunity.
You know, Scully seems like a really good dude and like, a pretty good tempered dude. And he also does take quite a bit of shit from a lot of people, but he's a pretty hardcore boxing fan.
Should try and get him on the show, man. You want to hear the stories about what Dawson was doing before the Ward fight? Yeah. Apparently he's got some really good stories about how he was training.
I'm sure he does. And plus, he knew Chad for a long ass time too, and I think he was with him much earlier in his career too. But yeah, he's a funny guy.
They split apart, came back together briefly, and now they're split again or something.
Who knows what Chad Dawson's doing?
I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't.
Well, whatever.
He used to be really good. I don't care now. Feel bad.
Well, since you actually touched on it, Sam, earlier, pause once more, but you touched on the Omar Figueroa versus Jerry Belmontes fight that opened up the card, and, you know, that was another kind of pleasant surprise on that Showtime card was, I don't know, I'd only seen Belmontes, like, I think some fight that was either on YouTube or Daily Motion, and it was a fight or two ago, and wasn't overly impressed, but it's kind of tough to really, look impressive with his style. Regardless, he, needless to say, gave Omar Figueroa a pretty tough time. Tim, what did you think that was a result of? Do you think that Figueroa is just kind of a limited guy and that's what it is? Belmontes have a funky style. What did you kind of attribute that to?
Yeah, I'd say it was both of those things. volume punchers who aren't used to fighting, guys like that, always have the worst trouble with them. But you know, that style, nobody likes fighting that. Nobody does well against that style. Nobody likes a guy who moves. They're not the easiest guys to fight. So, you know, I looked at it like kind of on this continuum of Figueroa hadn't really – he's still relatively untested. You know, he hasn't really fought anybody like that we've seen, at least that I've seen. And it's not too far away from what happened to some other guys who are sort of similar to him. And Leo Santa Cruz, once he started fighting a couple boxer types, he didn't look quite as good. And then, although he's kind of corrected that. And then, of course, Brandon Rios had his share of trouble with the Abrils of the world. It's one of those things where it's just a particularly bad style matchup. And if Figueroa is, you know, going to move to that next level, he's going to have to learn how to deal with guys like that because you're going to run into them here and there. But it's a nightmare style matchup for most guys.
What did you think of it there, Sam?
I think, I don't know, I've become aware of Figueroa probably only in about the last 18 months, kind of as a prospect. And I think it's a shame because he blew out Avnicotto, who isn't really anything too great. I mean, Lomachenko destroyed him in the amateurs on more than one occasion, I think, like by an obscenely wide margin for amateur boxing. But I just don't see any improvement. And I know he hurt his hands and stuff, but and I don't want to. I will be slightly smug, especially to Mr. Swain. But this was one fight where a few people had mentioned potential for an upset. They were talking about it on the Boxing Voice and stuff as being, you know, Belmontes is a spoiler, especially against, like you said, volume punchers like Figueroa. We don't know how the hands. We didn't know how the hands were going to be, and he hadn't been in the ring for so long, so he was always going to be a bit rusty. And I felt like he was forcing it the entire night. He never seemed comfortable, but it was kind of I don't know if has anything come out about him. I was expecting them to drop that excuse straight away, but I haven't read it yet. But I don't know.
I haven't heard anything either.
Oh, you haven't? Yeah. I haven't, but I
expected it too.
Yeah, I thought that was the first thing they'd say. And I mean, maybe it's to his credit that he hasn't fallen back on that excuse, but he didn't cover himself in glory post-fight, and I just don't really see any improvement, and it's a shame because he's with Joel Diaz, isn't he? And you know that guy he's improved Bradley a lot. You'd think like he'd be able to get something out of him.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the deal with Figueroa was. I think you know you put him against somebody like Eric Hall with it, just going to come forward and eat 10 trillion punches. And yeah, he's going to look fantastic, but I tend to think of that. Maybe he is limited, but maybe it's just a growing pain fight. Because like Tim said, nobody looks good against that style. Nobody. And Belmontes beat him, what, 5 times in the amateurs, once made him cry, according to Jim Gray. Of course, he needed to bring that up.
Jim Gray loved saying that.
He loves making people cry.
Jim Gray needs to be paint punched really bad. But, sometimes another fighter just has your number, and then sometimes there are guys that you just can't look good against, and maybe that's what it was. I actually had it a draw.
But I mean, I don't think we should make too many excuses for him, because Belmontes was coming up in weight, and he fought in March.
Right.
So, like, do you know what I mean? He wasn't.
Yeah, I'm completely like, with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel I don't want to write Figueroa off. He's really young, and he definitely has talent. But I don't know. I'm getting very skeptical, and to the point where he needs. I feel like he needs a big performance. He should have knocked Arakawa out. Like we saw what Linares did to him. He didn't lose a round, and he went to war with him. And I know the hands went, but if the hands go, then you know, you have to accept that you're diminished as a fighter. Like, it's not an excuse. It's like,
I'll
be great if I had a chin. You're not great because you don't have a chin.
I think it would have been great to see him say something after the fight, kind of like what Santa Cruz did when he struggled with the guy who was a mover. I mean, Santa Cruz's reaction was, "I'm so," you know, he was kind of embarrassed and he was disappointed, and he felt kind of eager to give the fans something that he didn't give them, and like he wanted to do better next time. And you didn't really hear that from Figueroa, which makes it easier to be a little skeptical of how much will get, how much improvement he can show or wants to show. But I just can never rule a guy out if he has a style struggle like that, because most people would. Not that Belmonte's hasn't been beaten or anything like that. I'm not saying he's great shakes, but it's one of those things where I'm not going to rule it out, but there's obviously great reason for skepticism.
I feel like the last two fights, he's the guys have stood right in, like Belmonte's for large parts of that fight stood right in front of him, and as did Arakawa. And you know, we had Bernstein in the second round saying like, "This is suicide." He's standing right in front of him, and end of the 12th round, he's still there. He's only been down once, and he's covered in blood, but he wasn't staggering all over the place. And same with Belmonte, he stood right in front of him, and he got hit a bit, but it wasn't anything too crazy. And I feel like Figueroa just didn't really know what to do when the guy was right sort of up in his face. And we've also seen that he's not that good at chasing guys around the ring. I don't know. I feel maybe he'll look exceptionally good against a very specific type of opponent, and then with almost anyone else, he looks very limited. But I'm not going to write him off. I won't be too skeptical.
With his style, specifically, like his style, it's, there's a ton of punches. He gets right up on people, but he's not very fast. It's sort of a Juan Diaz-like style. He doesn't really have one-punch knockout power, where if he does stop somebody, it's accumulation over a span, and if you can stay away from him, you can do okay. And he's, 24 now? And it's sort of,
yeah, he's still young.
He is so young, but at the same time, like those guys that just throw 120 punches around, they don't last very long. I mean, Diaz was pretty much done at like 27.
Yeah,
well,
and maybe
it's also
it's a shame they will, but
well,
they'll
it's also
Baskin was saying it the other week. They drop off. Sorry, Patrick.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say at like 23, 24. That's also old enough that he's probably not going to do a whole ton of developing. I would have to say. I mean, he's probably physically about, you know, as developed as he'll get. And then also in terms of style, he's probably not going to change his style, you know, at least not completely. But just to kind of play devil's advocate a little bit to what you were saying, Sam, and I don't know if you prefer Sam or Samuel. So if you prefer Samuel, I apologize. But regardless, to kind of play devil's advocate to what you were saying, I think that he has gotten a little bit better, but I think that the hand thing, you know, not to make excuses for him, but I think that's also going to limit his style and what he can do a little bit, especially given that he's a guy who throws so many punches. I mean, Arakawa showed a fairly ungodly, you know, amount of toughness that night. So I do kind of think that Figueroa should have stopped him, but I also think that that fight could have been stopped at a few points too, where Figueroa was just beating the ever-loving shit out of Arakawa. But somehow Eric Carl is, you know, staying upright and slinging these slaps back. So, you know,
I agree with that.
You kind of have to give him a little bit of credit there too. Although I'm also at the end of the day kind of with you in that I'm a little skeptical, especially given the way he acted after the fight, that he's going to be able to do a real big turnaround or be able to pick a whole lot up, you know, as a 23 or 24 year old.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you don't want to say it's rebuilding, but kind of he needs to take a step back and kind of reassess a little bit. And I don't know, maybe he needs to make alterations to the style if the hands are going to go again in future. We've seen other people do it. They were far more skilled than Figueroa, but it's certainly possible with the right attitude. But yeah, I think you're right to an extent. Arakawa fight could have been stopped. I think people got caught up in the romance of it a little bit and wanted it to finish. A bit like it would have been amazing if the Molina Matisse fight had gone 12 rounds. That would have been fantastic. Sadly, not to be.
Obscure fact about a TQ Yarsefer, when he tried to join the team Sam wanted his byline to read Samuel Latito, and I just wouldn't let him do it.
Yeah, never really forgiven him.
That's a tragic editorial overstep, Tim.
I figured that, like, on his little byline would just be like a picture of somebody random on Twitter.
Teddy Ellis.
I don't know.
That man is a saint.
Well, it's, you know, we actually I don't know if you guys knew, but I was able to get a hold of Teddy Atlas the other day, and I was talking to him about the Figueroa versus Belmontes fight, and basically he said,
I put the lime in the coconut, I mix it all up, I put the lime in the coconut, I drink it all down.
Yep, that was all he said. I cried. I just curled up and cried. You know, to be in the presence of such genius.
When he says the word lime for the second time, and he does that, like, he does the jazz hands. Oh, it's so, so creepy.
Is that a jazz hand or a seizure?
Yeah. It's one of
rabies.
It's rabies jazz hands. It's rabies jazz hands. It's a common side effect of rabies is jazz hands.
True.
God, I hope I never meet him. That guy would stab me.
Yeah, he very well might.
Yeah.
I think it's like Rafi said on Theory the other week. He's just trying to get fired. He's trying to get us to pay. Doing crazier and crazier stuff.
So I tried to kind of time this out. I did it fairly well, but I tried to save at least a good half of the show so that we could preview Mayweather, Maidana, and all the other bull jive that's on that card. But real quick, before we got there, does anybody have any funny jokes or anything like that to say about Vladimir Klitschko defending the heavyweight title? Somebody funny? Anything?
I had a joke about they kept going on about how Leopai was the Asia-Pacific heavyweight champ. And I mentioned that I don't think there are too many heavyweight opponents in Asia-Pacific outside Samoa. I said, who's he fighting for the belt? Is he fighting, like, Brian Viloria or something? And then Brian Viloria tracked the tweet down about 12 hours later and retweeted it. I didn't at him, and I don't follow him, but he found it somehow. He must have searched his own name.
Wow.
I just got back from Asia. You would be surprised. I was in Japan last summer, and those people are skinny, small people. But you know, there's some thicker brothers in Indonesia. Yeah, there's some types around there. You could maybe squeeze one or two of them together into like a Muppet Man / heavyweight.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I just read a day or two ago that the Japanese guy that Golovkin just brutally KO'd like 14 months ago has moved up to heavyweight. Yeah, Ishida has moved up to heavyweight. He's like 203 pounds or something.
Yeah, there was a story about that at the time. Like he was trying to get a fight with a guy ranked, I think, on the fringes of the top 10, and based on the name, and he couldn't get it because he'd never fought a heavyweight before. But there were only about, like, I don't know, there's only about 50 guys in the whole country at heavyweight, so he won't have too far to go. I don't know how prestigious the Japanese heavyweight belt is.
Yeah, I think you get to a certain point, you just have to start doing sumo.
He is cool, though. Yeah, he could go through that.
Well, I like to keep my latently homosexual combat sports separate. So, basically, if Ishida starts fighting in one of those Mawashi, one of those diaper things, dude, count me out. I'm out.
If you guys ever get to Japan, go see some sumo wrestling. By the way, that shit is amazing. It's so much their appreciation for that sport is, you know, as a combat sport, it's so fascinating the way in America where if people aren't throwing punches 100 times per second, that everybody, you start snarking on Twitter about how boring it is. In sumo wrestling, the more times they have false starts where they start to get down there and then they pull back out and throw the rice and do all that stuff, the more times they don't do anything, the more excited the Japanese fans get. They have such a different appreciation of, like, in Japan, if you try to pick off a runner in baseball, you get like out, like great big applause. But in America, it's like, how dare you try to get an out?
Are they as quiet as they were when Tyson Douglas?
In the boxing matches they seem to, but they do get real worked up in those intervals I was mentioning on the sumo. Like they're quiet for a while, and then it's like if there's like four or five false starts, oh man, they start turning rabid. They're getting real excited and they're having the sake in their little boots, so they start getting a little rambunctious. It's fun.
And also they go particularly nuts. Because the only reason I know is because I remember back in the day, probably only being like 10 or 11 years ago, but before Friday night fights, they would always have some type of like martial arts type of program.
Yeah.
So it would either be like the, you know, if you were lucky, it was kickboxing or something along those lines. If you were unlucky, it was like the karate brick breaking, like with dudes with mullets who couldn't fucking break the bricks on the first try ever. But occasionally there was sumo wrestling. And so that used to just be fun to watch. That was one of the few that I thought was fun to watch. And I just remember that when they would have somebody who was super small beating someone who was super big, like hats, the seat covers came off and everybody started throwing shit. So I don't know. Sumo wrestling is kind of a cool sport, I would say.
They used to have a thing on UK TV called Trans World Sport, which showed, I think it might still be on, but it's on like a sort of cable channel or something now. But it was on Sunday mornings, and it used to kind of show snippets of all the world sports. So the stuff that, you know, like bullfighting and stuff that you never get in the UK. And they'd show sumo, but only if it was either like the grand champion of the world or if it was a little guy beating a big guy. And that was the only times we cared about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was solid stuff. I mean, I've been saying for a long time, especially since I used to be a really big fan of Pride FC, which was kind of I guess you could call it like the Japanese UFC a while back, except for they didn't drug test, so these guys were yoked out of their minds and crazy and roid-raged and slamming each other all over the place. So it was awesome. But, you know, the way that they treat sports kind of as entertainment in Japan in particular is something that I think that the U.S. television can learn a lot from, especially the ring walks and entrances. Every so often, somebody like a Prince Nassim Hamed strolls in with a crazy entrance that, you know, the U.S. and U.K. fans a lot of the times would get pissed and start throwing stuff at him. But he also generated a shitload of interest, you know, partially because of that type of stuff. So I'd like to see more fighters doing crazy stuff entering the ring.
Preach.
Well, I'm hoping for some. I'll be at Frotch Groves next month at Wembley, and I'm hoping that there'll be some big entrances that night, maybe involving Frotch's brother or something. His family are good entertainment.
Let's hope nobody tries to suck in his ear hole or whatever it was that he said the other day, Sam.
Slurping.
Get it right. Yeah, he's got a gift for leaving his statements open to interpretation. I don't think he quite gets it. And he's got that little earring as well, so it's kind of, he doesn't do himself any favours.
What is it with the bad breath thing? Always the bad breath.
Yeah, like literally that's, when you're 5 years old, that's considered sort of childish. It's just like the least insulting thing you can do. It's terrible. I think he might be trolling us by doing it.
I kind of think so, too. Well, anyway, we got thrown off there for a couple minutes, but let's dive right into this shit. The hashtag the moment, hashtag toe, hashtag everything. Floyd Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana, everybody. So, I'm sure we'll have all something, you know, kind of smarmy or, you know, something to say about this fight, but overall, Tim, how do you sum up this fight?
Wow. That's pressure.
You don't have to sum it up like in two words or something, but
I wrote 1,400 words about it this morning. Summing it up, I don't know how to sum things up.
Well,
let's see.
I know, but well, yeah, everybody's going to have to follow along the site anyway to get your full take, but, you know. Yeah.
The short of it is, it could have been worse, but I'm disappointed that I have to say that. I mean, like, Amir Khan would have been a much worse choice, but now we get Maidana, and at least he kind of earned it by, you know, beating real welterweights. and has a punch and could therefore maybe potentially somehow possibly, but probably definitely not, knock out Mayweather. I'm not enthused about this. I was really enthused about the Canelo fight. I know a lot of people weren't, but I really was down for that fight and was excited about it. I wasn't that excited for some of the other Mayweather fights of late, but this one is just the one where I'm like, yeah, the chances of an upset are so much more remote than a usual Mayweather fight, that even though he kind of deserves to be there, I'm just not even remotely interested.
Well, what say you, Swain?
I'm about to say, I'm a huge Maidana fan. I love that guy. I will watch him fight a rabid bear. Actually, that would be more interesting to me.
Way more interesting.
Way more interesting. So I would watch him hit the heavy bag. That's how cool I think he is. I would let him cut hold you and Foley at the same time.
Oh.
I don't have a wife to offer up, which is why I've never really come up with an answer to that. But yeah, you both of y'all's wives, fair game.
You don't get it turned on.
Yeah, fair enough. At the same time, I'm with Tim. It's just, it's not a competitive fight, and it's for all the reasons that he was able to hit Broner, that's why he won't be able to hit Mayweather. And it's just anybody that thinks that Broner and Mayweather have a similar style is not paying attention, or they don't really know anything about footwork. I just don't see him being able to hit Broner cleanly, or being able to hit Mayweather clean. It's just he's not going to get there. His punches are huge. They're looping. Mayweather is the master of distance and timing. And those are two things that are absolutely going to work against Maidana. So maybe if Mayweather takes the first two rounds off, like he has been occasionally known to do, just to sort of get his timing right, Maidana might steal one or two. But past that, nah, it's not competitive. The undercard sucks balls. It's just, yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
It does. It's a whole undercard.
Bloody fool. Not being fooled by the names.
What's your take then, Sam? I want to hear what you got to say, man. Pictures ain't going to help you now, brother. Let's go.
I'll get them later. I'm making them. I think the same way. I don't think Maidana will win a round. I think he might get given a round by virtue of kind of the same way as a lot of people gave Bradley the 11th the other week against Pacquiao. I don't think he won the 11th. He just did slightly better than the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 12th. I don't think Maidana will. I didn't think Canelo would win a round, and I gave him one. I don't think Maidana's got much of a chance. Like if he got two rounds, I'd be shocked, genuinely. Like Swain says, he's big looping punches, unnatural 147. I still think he's blown up at the weight. Floyd is, he could dodge him all day. He could dodge him when he was half asleep. And I think if Floyd wants to, he can knock him out. Because Maidana's been hurt by a lot of guys he's fought. They've hurt him. His recovery powers are absurd. It's ridiculous how fast he... he's like a... I'm trying to think of a superhero that I can't think of one. Ignore that.
Wolverine.
Yeah, Wolverine, man. Easy.
Oh, yeah, Wolverine. Yeah. Sorry. I was thinking of the T-1000, but he's a bad guy.
Yeah, Wolverine's the extent of my comic book knowledge.
But so he recovers very quickly, but he does get hurt. Like Soto Carras hurt him, Jose Cito hurt him, Ortiz hurt him a load of times. Khan nearly knocked him out in the first round at his natural weight.
Yeah, to the body.
Which is crazy. People forget about that. He was very close. You know, you had Roy Jones screaming like, he's not going to get up, he's not going to get up. And
Roy screams that no matter what.
He does, yeah. Sits down on the stool.
He's not getting up, Jim. Yeah.
But no, I
anybody
really
else
think,
want to
I
do
think
a Roy impression?
Yeah, sorry, I can't.
He's not getting up, Jim.
Sorry, go ahead, Sam. We hijacked you.
Yeah, no, sorry. I was just saying, I think if Floyd can catch him and hurt him later on in the fight, because Maidana will get very tired, and he was exhausted against Broner, and then he hit him with that 1-2 left-right in the 9th round, and that put him down. And then you saw Maidana kind of grow a few inches, pause, and kind of get a second wind. I paused myself. And he, you know what I mean? Like, he puffed his chest out. And I remember tweeting in, like, the seventh or eighth round, they're going to give these middle rounds to Broner, and he's going to claw his way back into the fight. And Maidana looks like he's shot his load. Again, pause. I don't mean it. This isn't deliberate. I'm really sorry. But I think that kind of gave him the confidence that when he knocked him down again. And then you had the headbutt thing, and Maidana was kind of... It kind of helped him in a way. He was able to catch his breath. And for all the criticism of Broner, he's so lazy and inactive. He can go 12 rounds easy because, he throws sort of 12 punches around or whatever. So he's fine. But Maidana was really swinging in the first four or five rounds of that fight, and then he gassed out. And then, the crowd was so behind him, it perked him up again. But I think if Mayweather can catch him in the sort of mid-late rounds and wobble him, as he has been wobbled before, I think Floyd can potentially pick him off. And I think if he wants to, he can knock him out. I wouldn't feel confident predicting that he will, but I think it's up to Floyd if he does, whereas you couldn't really say that with Canelo. I think Floyd could have knocked him out, but it would have required a bit of luck and a bit of kind of Canelo giving up mentally, maybe.
You know what, I think that a very interesting discussion in regards to this fight, and I saw a handful of people on Twitter talking about it earlier, is, you know, the how much isn't Marcos Maidana awkward, and I think that might play into how the fight, you know, actually winds up going. The activity of Marcos Maidana was one of the reasons why I thought he would get to Adrian Broner, apart from Broner's defense just being not nearly as good as advertised. He's hittable. He always has been, and, you know, he's just sometimes awkward. That's pretty much it. You know, the defense doesn't really work as well when you don't counter back or throw punches like Floyd Mayweather does. But in a handful of fights, Marcos Maidana has basically just been able to penetrate a guy's defense with just volume and will. Oh, wow, there was no pause there.
We're professional.
I was carrying clean through. No room for a pause.
Wow,
but, you know, he's been able to kind of, you know, will himself to, you know, overcoming a guy's defense or a guy's, you know, better talent or something like that, you know, in a number of different fights. And so that's the question for me is he going to be able to kind of caveman his way inside? And I mean, I kind of don't think he will, but I think it's safe to say there's a lot of people rooting for him to do exactly that. And so I don't know. I think the smart thing to do is to pick Floyd. Obviously that's what I'm going to wind up doing. But at the same time, I really want to believe that there's something in Marcos Maidana that he's capable of actually pulling this off, but I think the odds are right in that he's probably not going to.
Yeah, I think about a 9-1 underdog is fair, as stupid as that sounds. I think 15-1 was too wide. Although I think that was kind of apocryphal to an extent. You've got all of the Pacquiao top rank guys saying those were the odds. I'm not sure if they actually were.
That was Aram. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think, like, Maidana won't give up. Guerrero gave up, at least mentally. I think Canelo gave up to an extent. Cotto didn't give up. Mosley gave up eventually. Almost Ortiz, you know, just completely lost it. And Hatton didn't give up, and that's probably what got him knocked out. But eventually, almost all of them do give up because they realize there's just nothing they can do. I don't think Maidana will, and I think that's one of the reasons why he'll have so much support. And it will be an interesting event, even if the fight itself is academic.
You know, the thing, as the week goes on, I'll watch more fight footage than I can possibly stand, but... thinking about it right now, about who has hurt Mayweather, it's been Shane Mosley. It's been Zab Judah, maybe. DeMarcus Corley. And is that about it? I mean, and
Hatton wobbled him in the first round.
Do you think?
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe.
He knocked him across the ring. It was kind of more of an off. It was like judo. He was more off balance, but he did knock him back. He caught him, although it wasn't kind of a clean punch.
I'm very proud of that.
10 years on.
Yes, it was great. It's a great moment for Great Britain. Yeah. It nearly. I'm not going to say anything about the Revolutionary War. That I almost went low. That was uncool. The one thing that that makes me think though is, has anybody as slow as Maidana ever hit Mayweather clean? And I'm struggling to think if he's even ever fought anybody quite this slow, other than Valdemir.
Exactly what I was going to say. Has he ever fought anyone that slow? I don't think he has.
I would say that, like, you know, Jose Luis Castillo was not a very fast guy. However, he was also a much more orthodox type of guy that did a lot more, you know, kind of straight punching. So that made up for the lack of speed. But I would say he was not as slow as Maidana generally is.
I would actually also interject. The thing with Castillo is that Castillo is a brilliant inside fighter.
Yes.
He can get close to you. He can hurt you. And you mentioned just a minute ago, you don't know if Maidana can get inside, but Maidana doesn't really work very well inside. It's like Broner tied him up extremely easily. He's actually going to have some space to punch. He can't fight from long distance because his arms are stubby, and he throws a punch from like his left ankle coming all over the place. But the other part is he doesn't fight real well coming close, and as far as middle distances go, you can't hit Floyd Mayweather from the middle distance. Like, Mosley was fairly well out when he caught him. The same thing with Zeb Judah. But those are two guys that have good hand speed. And Maidana
The Judah one was a counter shot, wasn't it? Like, I think Mayweather missed with a punch, and Judah caught him.
Right.
Exactly the same way he caught Matisse, incidentally, except Matisse smiled and nodded and tapped his chin.
Right.
And Floyd sort of wobbled a little bit. And then, Mosley Superman did. He dived right in with the right hand.
Right, and Maidana is about as fast as cold molasses. Right, but it was still a little bit more distance than what Maidana is going to go to. And the thing with Mosley is, shot as he was at that point, and he was pretty shot. You know, the Margarita fight completely aside. He caught
it
with
18 months after the Margarita fight. I'm not saying you are, but people always bring that up. It was almost 2 years afterwards. Ridiculous.
Right.
He had not fought at all, too. That was the last fight he had and then was out for a while.
Right, so for him that was recent history, but at the same time, so the point I'm getting at is the punches that have caught him and hurt him have been from quick-handed guys, and they were very straight punches. Maidana doesn't even throw a straight jab. His jab loops. And he's pretty, like, as far as to the point of can Mayweather see what he's doing, yeah, he's going to know what he's doing before Maidana does, because Maidana winds up his jab. And I love Maidana. I'm a huge fan. But the aspects that where people have been, and we're having to go back into, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago to find some guy that won a round competitively.
Yeah, I think you've got
Zeb Judah won a round from him in 2008. But, I mean, how old were any of us in 2008? You know what I mean? So the thing with Maidana is just love the guy to death. I wish him the best, but I don't think he's going to be really able to land anything clean unless it's lucky.
What about rabbit punches? I could see some rabbit punches, maybe.
I am all in favor of rabbit punches.
Tim, if you haven't, if it's not on your list, I mean, you've probably seen it a bunch of times before, but watch the Soto Karas fight again with Maidana, because he should have been disqualified. Like, he was filthy in that fight. Punching on the break after virtually every round. He was punching behind the head. He was low blowing. I think he's got to go nuts against Floyd. He should do all that stuff. Either get DQ'd or, you know, see if he can get away with it. And I think it's, have they got Tony Weeks as the ref? Is that confirmed? I think I read that.
I think it is, yeah. That's what
and
I read.
He won't let him hold, and he won't let him do any of the rough stuff. And it kind of, that's really the only way he could win.
Well, I think Maidana is as dirty as whoever he's fighting. Because Soto Karas, that was one foul-filled fight. The whole fight was nothing but fouls.
It was a street fight.
But,
it was an absolute street fight.
Oh, absolutely.
A really nasty atmosphere to that fight.
And it was super fun. I mean, it was so much fun to watch, but, you know, I think I love the guy to death, and I don't see his trainer saving him late rounds when he probably needs to be saved. which is, you know.
Oh yeah, Garcia won't pull him out. No way.
I mean, it's like I say when sort of that happens, is he's going to be a future pudding enthusiast, because that's going to be all he's going to know how to say. Pudding.
You think so?
Pudding.
I feel like he's pretty much the same as he's all. I don't know, Maidana. I think he's got a pretty thick skull. Like.
I think he does too. That's just my take on any fight where some guy takes way too much punishment is future pudding enthusiast.
Well, I mean, speaking of which, did you? Sorry, Patrick, to cut in, but 24/7.
No. Saturday, please do.
The little segment with Rios, where he popped up. Genuinely, that was upsetting to see him. Like, yeah, he's not. I know you talked about this last week, but like, you know, he bought the. Did you guys see it? He bought the tickets, and then Garcia was like, "You didn't have to buy them. We'll get you them for free." And Rios looked really confused, and then he couldn't work out where his seats were and how far back G was from A. And it was genuinely like people were laughing, but I did feel a bit awkward and a bit upset by it.
I'm not sure that's not just Brandon Rios, because he was pretty dumb to start off with.
You know, Garcia made a joke, I think it was this week, where he said, you know, because he was fighting in the same division as Floyd when they were both, you know, younger. And he made a joke about how it's probably good that he never fought Mayweather because for his long-term health. And I was like, when did this guy start caring about long-term health of anyone? He's not, you know, he ran Margarito into an eye socket injury that basically ruined him. And yeah.
He's very protective of Mikey, though.
Yeah. Hey, if Mikey gets a headbutt, pull him out right away.
He won't have any more of it. If it's a Garcia, then he's very protective.
Well, you know, I think that, I will say, first of all, just to kind of go off of what you were saying, Sam, about Maidana having to get dirty. Now, I think that in theory, that's probably a good idea that Maidana should want to try to, you know, take it to the trenches, as they say, however you want to put it. He probably should want to mug Floyd Mayweather as much as he can. However, number one, I think that as we've all kind of touched on, Maidana just is not that great inside, and as far as his technique or as far as his know-how inside, he's just kind of one of those guys that strong arms away into doing things rather than finessing away or having any type of tricks or anything like that, although he's not totally skillless or anything. But I think that if you're going inside fighting versus inside fighting, Floyd Mayweather should be able to beat him pretty handily there. But also on top of that, the other point I wanted to say was that I've said it in the past, and I said it actually in my preview for Floyd Mayweather versus Ortiz, which was, I think, a little bit before I was writing for Queensbury Rules, I think. But I had said that Victor Ortiz was probably going to try to get dirty with Floyd, and that was a huge mistake because, obviously Floyd Mayweather is undefeated, so everybody who's gone up against him has lost anyway, but every time a fighter has tried to get really nasty with him, he's gotten even nastier back every single time. For example, Floyd said that in the past that Emmanuel Augustus was his most difficult fight, Emmanuel Burton then. But that was his most difficult fight. And Burton tried to get kind of nasty with him inside, and so Floyd started absolutely just kicking the shit out of him, like intentionally, like dragging shit out in the later rounds, because he was just like, oh, all right, you're going to try to get nasty? Well, then I'm going to basically draw out a beating for you. And then, of course, we saw it again with Ortiz, where Ortiz started, you know, headbutting, using his elbows and stuff like that, and Floyd basically was like, all right, I'll set him up for a sucker shot that looks legal. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm not going to say that entire thing was planned or anything like that. But regardless, I think getting dirty with Floyd, that might not be the greatest idea. So
yeah, I think at this point you're sort of talking about how you can go from a fraction of a chance of beating Floyd Mayweather to a slightly higher fraction of a chance of beating Floyd Mayweather for Maidana. And you know, it's probably not a good idea to try most anything with him because it's all going to fail. So you're talking about like, well, how could he do it? And maybe getting rough with Mayweather will just make it so that Maidana takes even more of a pounding. But what other stuff can he do?
That's
where the discussion goes.
That's a fair point.
It makes the perspective of the fight so warped because, like I think pretty much everyone, I want Maidana to win. Like he's a fan favorite, but realistic expectations, he won't win. So what can we ask for? And I suppose the only realistic thing that would be entertaining is if Mayweather puts a beating on him. And you know Maidana will take it and Garcia will send him out again and we'll salute him for seeing the final bell and taking his punishment and not complaining. And that's kind of the best case scenario. It's a really weird, framing for the build up to the fight. I just, like you said, Tim, there's just, you're going from a minute chance to just a very, very, very slim chance. And those are the margins we're talking about.
The other thing, too, and I would add on the dirty factors, Floyd, like, he uses his elbows so damn much. Great at using his elbows. He's dirty as shit. If anybody
and
ever
in
tells
way
you
that doesn't make it look dirty.
Well, I mean, you look at the cuts on Cotto, half of them were from elbows. Because when he goes into that flailing his arms around when you're in close, he's really just throwing elbows.
He throws the 1-2. It's the Tyson 1-2. It's the punch and then the elbow straight afterwards. He does it the entire time. He forearms the entire time. It's where Broner learned it from.
He's not even remotely clean.
Against Maidana. Like, and he gets away with it. And Floyd, he might cut him up, like you said. Yeah, very good point.
But yeah, he's very good at doing it in a way where it doesn't look blatant. Like it doesn't look like he's some dirty guy. Although, I will say that even though Victor Ortiz is basically a dipshit and especially represented himself as such against Floyd, he did have a point actually at that moment when he was doing the headbutting shit. It's just that actually doing the headbutting kind of canceled out whatever point he had. Floyd was using his elbows and forearms against him. It was just. You basically have no case after you, like, really blatantly throw a headbutt at the dude.
It was like Maidana and Broner, wasn't it? Like, Maidana was looking to finish. Broner locked both his arms up, like, in a sort of, almost
and
like a full Nelson. And he wouldn't let go. The ref was doing nothing. And as Malinardi expertly put it, yes, it's a foul. Yes, it's a point deduction. But the guy's looking to finish. Like, you have to give him the opportunity to finish. The other guy can't just cheat his way out of it. And, you're kind of stuck between... You either give up your advantage altogether or you try and foul your way out. And I think 99% of guys would do the latter.
Well, I mean, that particular ref was Lawrence Cole, and he has no business in a boxing arena, let alone refing a fight. Lawrence Cole. I mean, Lawrence Cole is one of the worst refs on earth.
He's an idiot.
He's horrible. Yeah, he's a complete, he makes Jay Nady look like a Rhodes Scholar. So, but, and the thing, too, is Tony Weeks isn't going to put up with that shit. At least you hope.
Well,
he's not going to penalize Floyd, is he? When was the last time Floyd had a point taken off? Floyd can do it all night. He won't penalize him.
No, he's very sneaky.
Go ahead.
Because I was basically going to move on to another question. So go ahead.
You think of the and I use the word great not in praise, but in just meaning they're really good at it. You think of the great cheaters of our time at the elite level. You have Klitschko who just doesn't. He's not even remotely subtle about what he's doing. I mean, it doesn't even come close to being not obvious. And while we're fans who can watch we watch it and we know, of course, that Mayweather is using the elbow, he's so subtle about it. Like it's like the most subtle cheat that anyone gets away with consistently. Because Hopkins is pretty good at the low blow on the opposite side of the ref, but Floyd is pretty good at putting that elbow out there in a way that he never gets called on it at all. I don't think I've ever seen a ref say, "Hey, watch your elbow," even in passing, or not even getting close to the point of a warning for a point deduction. He just seems to be subtle enough with it that the refs never catch it.
Does look like he's blocking.
Yeah,
I mean, he makes it look like he's blocking and parrying punches, and in reality, he's throwing elbows.
Yeah, exactly. So he makes it look like he's trying to do the right thing when in reality, he's deliberately you know, smacking his forearm across the guy's face repeatedly. But he makes it look like he's trying to get back into the correct position. It's very, very clever. And I think to a casual fan who's never watched a fight before, they'd think they'd almost think he was in trouble because he looks like he's flailing to an extent. But then you realize it's completely deliberate.
Well, and he even said in an interview this past week, I mean, I can't remember where it was, but it might even have been on the 24/7 or whatever, All Access, whatever. But I just remember reading that he had said that he doesn't even see it coming when an opponent punches at him, but that it's like he can feel it. And that's the way it looks, too. He really does have a kind of otherworldly type of defense where he moves a lot, and it almost looks like all a guy needs to do is put punches together and throw a lot, and they'll hit Floyd Mayweather, except guys have tried that. They don't really play gloves on him.
He's the one.
Yeah,
he's the one.
That's right. Neo.
I just thought that was a joke. 9 months too late.
I went and saw The Raid 2 in Indonesia while I was there because I might as well. It was an Indonesian movie. But I was reading
the
up on it, and the guy
crazy.
Who directed. I've not seen the first one. The second one is also very, very crazy, though. I can tell you that much. But I saw that the director did some of his five favorite action scenes of all time, and there was one with Jet Li where he and the other guy wore blindfolds, and you even with camera tricks where you know they were probably stopping at moments, it was amazing to watch two blindfolded men go through even those choreographed movements where they could block each other's punches. I do. If anybody could win a boxing match blindfolded, it would probably be Floyd Mayweather.
He's a Jedi.
It's pretty incredible. Well, let me ask you guys, I guess, one last question or one last thought about this fight, because I tweeted it out and a couple people answered, but on a scale of, I'd say, 1 to 10, if Marcos Maidana were able to pull out this win legitimately, like, i.e., you know, not just do kind of well and then pull out a decision like Bradley against Pacquiao the first time or something, but actually a legitimate win, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would that upset be like, 1 being not much of an upset, 10 being Tyson Douglas? Tim?
Yeah, that's a solid 10 there, bro. That would be this guy doing it to Mayweather. Any guy doing it to Mayweather would be huge. I might have mentioned this once before, and forgive me if I'm repeating an anecdote from a past radio performance, but I didn't watch Jones Tarver 2 live. My neighbors upstairs were watching it, and I heard everybody jump off their couch and start screaming at maximum volume, and I was like, oh, that's right, Jones Tarver 2 is on tonight. I wonder what the hell just happened. And I think my reaction would equal all of those dudes who were upstairs, like, combined in terms of how shocked I would be that this guy would do it to Mayweather.
What do you think, Swain?
An absolute time. I mean, that's like Billy Bob from Varsity Blues going, 10.
What about you, Sam? You probably say 10 too, but say it anyway.
No, I'm going to say a 9. I'm going to be a contrarian. Because the only thing is, obviously I wasn't watching boxing at the time, but I've read a book on the Tyson Douglas fight, and Douglas was... He was borderline, like, bum level when he fought Tyson. I know, like, Larry Merchant talks about it. Like, he'd fought, like, one decent guy and basically quit on his stool after, like, 8 rounds in the last few years. Maidana is he's a legit top 6 or 7 welterweight. And he was a legit top, arguably a top 3 junior welterweight. Tyson was never unbeatable, and Floyd, to be perfectly honest, he seems like he's going to be pretty unbeatable for at least the next couple of years. So I'd give it like a 9.5, just because I think Maidana's a lot better than, in our perception, he's a lot better than Douglas was.
I was going to make fun of you for trying to be all different and like, oh, look at me, I'm different. I'm not one of the in crowd. But then you kind of won me over on that, sadly. So... I want to shake your hand.
Have you ever? It's called The Last Great Fight. I forget the author, but it's all about, Buster Douglas's life. And it's a really, really good book. And he's a really interesting guy, in or out of a coma.
Look at Sam reading.
Come on. Smarty Pants.
Who's that about?
Jesus.
I done read
it. That's that book by Layden. But regardless, I think that you do have a really good point there, Sam. I was kind of hooting you and shit too there with the I'll give it a 9, but you do have a point. Marcos Maidana is a legitimate upper tier type of fighter, and even if, yes, it would be a huge upset, and I would be shocked if he won, but would it be kind of on that level? Yeah, probably not.
He's not an unknown guy. Do you know what I mean? He's not just like some. It's not like bum of the month Joe Lewis sort of thing. Like he's an established guy within the boxing world. It's just that the entire I was blabbing on about this on the Bad Left Hook forums earlier today about when I should have been working, but just about how kind of the entire top tier of the sport has been completely bent to Floyd's will, and. We now perceive opponents according to the Mayweather criteria. And obviously I don't want to get into a debate about whether he ducks or whether he is selective or whatever, because it's for another time. But we now have it where people are saying, well, Maidana must be a legitimate challenger because he's the only guy left. And you want to say, well, no, he's the only guy around left that Floyd hasn't left to rot and that Floyd is willing to fight. Like, there are plenty of guys who were more worthy at various times that Floyd ignored. And because he makes money and, you know, spends $1 million a day or whatever it is, or sorry, $1 million a month, and has a plane with 25 women in it at all times, like, people kind of say, well, that must be the right way to do things because he's done so extraordinarily well. And he's kind of broken the mold. And to an extent, they're right. But also, it's almost the sporting elements have become almost secondary. And it's just really strange to see that. And you get, like Foley was saying the other week, like Pacquiao fights Marquez and Bradley twice in 3 of his last 4 fights. And the narrative is that he got knocked out. And it's like, well, that's not the point. What are you? I think you're missing the bigger picture here. And, you know, Floyd fights Guerrero and Cotto 6 years after he should have done. And people are saying, ah, flawless Floyd, you know, he hasn't missed a beat and all this rubbish. And it's just, you know, it's... The Floyd's the best, there's no question, but the kind of the framework you perceive it through is so warped when you head towards the Showtime stable, I think.
That's fair. I mean, the reason I started off as a Floyd Mayweather fan when I first started following boxing, and I still kind of consider myself one, but the reason he makes me as mad as he does, besides, of course, all the woman beating and all that business, in terms of his career, the thing that makes me so upset about him is that if you look at the list of people he didn't fight when he should have, I still think he would have beaten every single one of them.
Yeah.
And that's what's disappointing, is that you know he very well could have gone, you know, if not 10-0, then 9-1, very well could have done that quite respectably and been much higher on a list of all-time greats, but he didn't. And it's why he makes me so angry, is that he disappoints me.
And it's the equivalent of Leonard saying, do you know what, I'm going to fight Benitez when he's 30 instead of 25, and I'm going to fight, you know, and I'm going to push all these, and I'm going to fight Duran a bit later on, maybe once, you know, once he started to decline a little bit. And Leonard could sit here now and say, yeah, well, I would have beaten them in their prime anyway. And you know, we know he would have done. We've seen the evidence. But it's the fact that you have to go out and do it. And yeah, he would have beaten Margarito. He would have beaten a prime Cotto. He would have beaten Paul Williams. He would have beaten Kostya Zou and all these guys and Casamayor. But you still have to. You get credit for showing up. You have to actually show up and do it. And he's the best, but he wasn't fighter of the decade for the last decade. And I don't think there's really any question. And sorry, Patrick, I'll give it back to you. I'm getting away from the point.
No, it's okay. This is what the show is for. I mean. And I think that there's a very solid point there. I mean, I think that pretty much all of us that are on here right now have a certain leaning, which is I would describe it as realistic about Floyd Mayweather, who he is, what he is as a fighter, which is a very great fighter and a fighter that would probably do well in just about any era. However, there are certain things that have happened, you know, over the course of his career inside the ring and out that, you know, make us kind of disappointed in the guy. if nothing else. I mean, being able to kind of step aside and be like, the guy fights every 6 to 9 months, you know, and if you're going to fight that way, then you need to be fighting against top guys every single time and not leaving any stone unturned. You know, I'd have to say that that's a fairly realistic, if not, you know, maybe cynical take that we all pretty much hold. But
it's like,
you know,
what's that thing about, I'll use a US sporting example to be international. But the thing about Michael Jordan, I think the quote is something like, I never wanted, when I was in my prime, I never wanted the best guys to sign for the Bulls. I wanted to play against them and I wanted to beat them. Like, he didn't want, you know, Shaq on the same team as him. And I don't know anything about basketball, but you know what I mean? He wanted like competition, and you do get the sense that, I mean, but then again, I guess he makes no bones about it, really. He cares about money, and fair play to him. He's done very well for himself business-wise, so I guess he's stuck true to his word in that sense.
Actually, now that Quiz is talking about it, it was after LeBron James and Chris Bosh went up in Miami with Dwayne Wade, asked Jordan, and they said, you know, did you ever consider trying to team up and make a super team when you were playing with, like, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson? He said, no, all I wanted to do was beat them.
He had a terrible team with Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Tony Kukoc around him. It was a pretty shitty team.
He didn't have them until the second three-peat, though.
He had Scottie Pippen with the first one. But
at the same time, it's not like, oh, hey, guys, you only want to make just under $20 million a year? You want to make, like, $27 million a year, and then we can dominate the league?
That's a fair point.
The sentiment holds, because Pippen was definitely unproven until 91.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something in great athletes where they need to compete, and they need to kind of constantly prove themselves. And, I don't know. Like, I don't really know much about basketball, but I feel like LeBron kind of didn't really know what he was doing in that sense. But anyway, I do think that Floyd, he's just not a warrior at the end of the day, and that matters to fight fans, I think, and it matters to me. And he's a businessman who can fight, and that's it.
Well, I think this is not to get too big on the NBA thing, but you know, I'm a Tar Heel, so I'm a huge Jordan fan, but the guy was a fucking psychopath. I mean, it just legitimately, that he was. He was so obsessed with winning that he was pretty much willing to ruin everyone around him. To whereas, and this is to steal a line from the Kimball book about Four Kings, that whereas like Ray Leonard was a businessman boxer, Marvin Hagler was a boxer businessman, and Floyd Mayweather sort of fits into the businessman boxer mold, whereas it's about the money first and everything else is second.
Yeah, I think that goes without saying. Let's see, we have a little under 20 minutes left, so sorry to kind of steer the conversation away, but let's do the shitty undercard, or at least the kind of crappy, at least, undercard.
Yeah.
Well, Foley and I have talked about the Amir Khan versus Louis Collazo fight a couple times in the last few weeks, and usually it's Foley going on a rant about how the fight is not worthy of being the whole, you know, headliner, blah, 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 that the guys at Showtime are saying. But it's an interesting fight nonetheless, I would say. And I think that Alex McClintock, our dude at Queensbury Rules, kind of hit the nail on the head in his, you know, fairly short preview of it, which was that, you know, it might not be the top of the top of the top, but at least as far as Collazo versus Khan goes, it's a respectable fight. It's an interesting fight. So what are your guys' take on it? Anybody jump out and say it. I knew that was going to happen. All right, Tim, say something.
Yeah, okay. I don't like it. I don't like the card. But I don't hate it either. You know, it's definitely not up to the standard of what we just got from the last Mayweather fight. The fight that I was talking about this with Corey Erdman earlier on his Daily Bob, it'll be on later this night on Sirius. He pointed out, and I agree, that the actually strangely, oddly good fight on the other card that people are maybe overlooking is Jaylen Love and Parabon, because it's evenly matched. I mean, I know people don't love Jay Leon Love. they're not crazy about him, and I get that. I'm not crazy about him either, but it's an evenly matched fight, and Jay Leon has been in a couple good ones. So that's one that I think people are not paying much attention to. I could care less about the Broner fight. The Khan Collazo fight is good by accident. Like, it's not, it shouldn't be a well-made match. It shouldn't be, because Khan should be better than this. And Collazo kind of is overachieving. You know, he got a win over Ortiz that said more about Ortiz than it did Collazo, and now that Collazo is going to fight Khan, and people expect that to be a good even fight, says more about Khan than it does Collazo. It just ends up being this roundabout sort of accidental intriguing fight, not a fight that we should be all that excited about for the world as it should be.
Sam, you sounded excited to jump in there.
Yeah. You know how much we love Khan in the UK. So popular. Can I just clear that up before I start? Like, Golden Boy did for years would peddle the myth that Khan would fight in the States and they'd tell us how popular he was over there, and then occasionally he'd come back over here, and you guys would get told how popular he was over here, and both of them, neither of them are true. I've genuinely never met a proper Amir Khan fan in my life. I've met people who know he's famous, but he's not popular. He doesn't have the persona, or really, there's just something about him that rubs people up the wrong way. But he is in interesting fights, and you know he won't give up, which is one commendable aspect to him. But I think he's in a bit tough here. I think he really should have taken the Devin Alexander fight. But like Tim says, Golden Boy, this has just completely fallen into their hands, and Showtime as well. Like, we're talking about two guys, Khan and Collazo. They've got one significant win in 3 years between them. Like, the last time one of them won a significant fight against, like, a name guy. What was the last one Khan won before he got, well, he lost to Peterson? It was Jazab Judah. How far are we going back? Collazo, he got beaten by Freddie Hernandez, and you know he was losing to like these guys we'd never even heard of, and then he comes in and he beats Face Lube, whose jaw is done, like, he can't fight anymore, he shouldn't have been licensed, and then he gets the Khan fight, and it's kind of good because they're both kind of flawed fighters. Collazo doesn't really punch that hard, and Khan, you know, doesn't have the chin. And I see it being a kind of quite rough and tumble fight because of the mistakes both guys make. And I can see Khan getting knocked down. I don't think he'll get completely spiked out. But I see Collazo winning a narrow decision. And I see Khan moaning about it for a few months and then getting an easy fight in the autumn. I don't think they're cashing him out, but I do think there's a sense of kind of his time has gone. And he's only 27, but he peaked so young, which I guess is another line of intrigue, because Collazo is finally coming into his own, or so we're told, at the age of 32 or however old he is. But no, it's kind of a mid-level fight, I think. It's well matched, but neither of them are elite, not anymore.
What say you, Slane?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in agreement with Ken and Sam. That Judah fight was like 3 years ago. That's Khan's last win, and then Collazo.
And that was an old Judah.
Yeah, it was an old Judah. I mean, he was old then. Like, he was pretty shock-worn at that point, where we sort of went. He was 2 or 3 years past where we had gone, whatever, it's that Judah. But, so, you know, Collazo's got the win over Vincent, and then there's pretty much nothing, and then he lost to Freddie Hernandez in 2011. So I'm not overly jazzed about the fight. Normally I would kind of go, yeah, I don't give a shit, put it on Fox Sports 1, and I'll watch it on Thursday. But at the same time, I hate Amir Khan so much, really want him to get knocked out. In addition to, like, the entertainment factor, because when he does get hurt, he gets so spasmodic. Like, his whole body sort of, he looks like he just got tasered when he's hurt.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, that's a very good
one. And then he opens his mouth, and I hope that he actually gets tasered for real. Because hearing him talk fills me with sort of this really sort of unrepentant, subpsychotic rage. But, yeah, I mean, it's two guys that really aren't top ten welterweights. So it's not really
That's why I don't want him to get sparked out. I want him to lose a decision, because then he can't say, like, oh, it's my chin that let me down. You know, I've got such a fighter's heart. If he just gets beaten on points and there's no question, then I can't wait
worse.
To hear his excuses.
I think he would be even worse if he got beat on points.
You think he'd do the robbery, Marquez style?
I think he would do it. You know, when Marquez cries robbery, he cries right. He storms out of the ring, and then they have to interview him, and he's buck naked except for a sombrero on his lap.
Oh, yeah. Is
angry. Amir Khan would be, like, standing there whining, and you couldn't tell what he says, and you're like, Jesus, Showtime, give me some subtitles, because I don't speak
Do you guys find him hard to understand?
Yes.
Yeah, he's got quite...
And I'm a native English speaker.
Yeah, he has got quite a strong accent, and his diction's not great.
I don't know what language they speak in Bolton, but it's not English.
It's a very specific accent. There's certain vowels they pronounce in a very specific way.
And there's certain consonants
that
they don't pronounce at all.
Really hard to understand him.
Khan is in this weird class. It's a very small class of fighter that he's often in very interesting and exciting fights. He and Berto and everybody just hates them anyway, because they just don't like them as people, or they don't like what they represent, or whatever. I tend to like watching Khan fight, but man, I would rather not hear anything he has to say at all. So I'm kind of grateful sometimes when I can't understand him.
I remember when Berto came in with the dog to when Angulo fought Canelo, and he was being really nice. He was sort of cheering on his stable mate, and he was kind of texting and tweeting and saying, like, come on, you know, Team Perro and all this stuff. And I was just sitting there looking at him ringside, just being like, oh, I really want to hate you, but you're being really nice. Stop it. It was, yeah, I know what you mean. It's, like, inexplicable. You just have this impulse to dislike them.
Well, the whole bullshit about how he had sparred Andre Ward and his chin was fine.
Yeah.
And Ward's like, I have no idea what that guy is talking about.
Yeah, and then Virgil, master trainer, comes in with yet more bullshit.
Well, right. I mean, like, if he just didn't talk, he'd be fine, because you go, you know what, the guy's got a lot of heart, and he does. He has a lot of heart. Yeah, he's got a lot of heart. His chin is shaky as shit, and then he talks, and you're like, dude, shut the fuck up. You have just eroded every ounce of goodwill in three sentences.
Yeah, you're right. And that goes double over here, because we've had a lot more exposure. He's been in the newspaper since he was 17 over here. And he was like that back then. He was as cocky as anything back then. He was speeding around Bolton, you know, driving fucking 90 miles an hour. It's a complete idiot.
Yeah, he's a moron.
I'm kind of on the page of that, you know, he's an exciting fighter and he's easy to hate. That's pretty much all it is, you know. He's easy to hate because when he does open his mouth, he's just a total buffoon. But he tends to be in good fights. So I guess I'll welcome him on just about any broadcast. Kind of like Victor Ortiz, really. I mean, when he opens his mouth.
Yeah, he's another one.
Well, it's just, you know, it's entertaining and all, but it's like, oh, fuck, dude. It makes you cringe, like, really hard. But then he starts fighting and anything happens and it's kind of fun. But, yeah,
that's
pretty much about the appeal.
Why not? Get Khan Ortiz on a Thursday night if he loses on Saturday.
Totally. Khan Ortiz and Berto, round robin. Everybody wins.
Throw Broner in there once he loses again.
Yeah, once Broner is degraded fully, he belongs in that crew.
I actually like Ortiz. He's like that retarded puppy at the animal shelter that bites the shit out of your hand and then pees on your foot. And then start wagging his tail like you're going to be friends. Like, the fuck, dude? I'm bleeding and I've got pee all over my leg. Why are you trying to be friends with me? That is Victor Ortiz.
That is Victor Ortiz. And he probably has actually done that in his life, too. That's what's messed
up. I would believe it.
Yeah, he's got bedwetter written all over him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shit, we got about 5 minutes left. I guess we'll skip the Adrian Broner shit because I'm not really interested in that fight, but... Go around real quick. Start, I guess.
Oh, guys,
we'll go same direction.
Sorry,
Go ahead.
Very quickly, on the Bruno Molina thing, how old does Carlos Molina look? It's ridiculous. Did
he's
you
like
guys
67.
See him? He's like in his mid-20s.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's not old, I promise you. He looks 40. He looks like Daniel Zaragoza.
I was going to say, I thought he was like mid-30s or something like that. Maybe early 30s,
right,
maybe.
I think he's a good few years younger than you think.
Look, guys, jail time and going that many rounds with Lucas Matisse will do that to you. You'll just look real old.
Yeah, it's the other Molina that did jail time.
Oh, gosh. Whoops.
Lampy. Yeah, one's a pedophile. The other one looks really old. You've got your weird Molinas mixed up, Tim.
Darn. I was thinking of the guy who fought De La Hoya then.
I don't think it was a Molina.
Yeah, there was a John Molina. Didn't he do that?
Oh, yeah, John
fight.
John Molina.
Oh, yeah.
Before the
Lundy fight with John Molina, the under the notes under his name, instead of, like, talking about his notable wins, it just said, no relation to John Molina. It was brilliant. That was the only thing they had to say about him.
Solid.
Well, Patrick, is your alter ego going to do any predictions for this card, or are you just going to leave your... inside.
Oh, no, I'm going to leave that for Vine. I got something. Don't you worry. Real quick, let's, I guess, start with Tim. You talked briefly about Jaylion Love versus Parabon. We got, like, 4 minutes left, so say something about it.
I already said everything there was to say about it. I have no more words about it. Why do you keep doing this to me, Patrick? I thought we were friends.
Well, you thought wrong. Sam, say something about it.
Carlos Molina's 28, by the way. I just looked it up. Ridiculous.
Yeah, he looks a little...
Sorry, I had to... It was for clarity. Go to Swain. I don't know what the question was.
All right.
Sorry.
Matt Swain.
Yeah. Jaylion Love. That's my one-word answer, is if. But probably an easy win for Love. I hope it's not. I hope he gets knocked the fuck out just because he's part of the Mayweather team, and I'm really, really, really over that. And,
I forget.
Well, I'm hoping that eventually if enough TMZ fighters lose, that Leonard Ellerbe will commit seppuku on camera so we can just be rid of him. So that's my bloody thought for the day, but I don't think it's that good of a fight. I hope Parabon exceeds my expectations.
He'll hang himself in one of Miss Jackson's empty closets. Poor guy.
Aww. I want to hang out with those guys because they have a lot of drugs. Like, they've got all the drugs that you want. The testosterone. I would like to get high with those guys, have a little testosterone, and then,
Floyd
and then
talks
lose
about,
some weight.
Yeah. Floyd talks
the
about
hell with that. I
want to
hang out with the fighters that are doing mescaline. Those are the guys I want to hang out with. Fuck the steroids. Give me the guys on mescaline.
Yeah, I think that's where we'll go ahead and leave that thought. I'll throw in my 2 cents, which is that I think Parabon's probably not going to have the speed to keep up with Jaylion Love, and that's pretty much all I got. And, you know, I can't top Mescaline. I don't think I can.
I don't
anyway.
Know. I think Parabon might be all right in this fight. He's a tough guy. And
Yeah.
Rosado's not much, and he beat Love. And I really don't think Love's very good. And he's a drugs cheat. Like, I will be booing him loudly from my sofa if it makes any difference.
I'm on Parabon's side just because I'm, you know, I side with the Latin fighters more often than not because I'm racist like that. Well, let's see.
That's because you know it's good for you.
Yeah.
You are married,
well,
after
my
all.
Wife's Mexican, so I'm kind of obliged to do it by law. You know, I'm pretty sure that's some type of U.S. law.
It's Parabon Argentina, isn't he? Argentinian, I think.
He's Mexican.
Oh, is he Mexican?
No, he's Mexican.
Sorry.
Look at Sam complicating the issue.
We British have a history with that part of the world, I'll have you know.
I actually did know that.
His full name is actually Marco Antonio Parabon Hernandez. I feel like he needs a good 4 more fucking Mexican names on the end of that already.
Oh, you just don't know Mexican people enough there, buddy. That's pretty much everybody. Well, hey, we got like 30 seconds left, so I'm going to go ahead and close this shit out. But I would like to say, of course, as always, thank you to everybody who tuned in live. bunch of people were tweeting back and all that type of stuff. I enjoy it. But thank you, Mr. Tim Starks, for coming on. Thank you, Matthew Swain. Thank you, Samuel Shepard. It was a great show today, and I hope that everybody's able to come back on again real soon. And we'll see everybody next week. Foley should be back. So, yeah, thanks again, everybody, and take it easy. Bye.
Cheers, man. See you later.
All right. Have a great night, guys.